Welcome to the Human Flourishing Project. I'm your host, Alex Epstein. I'm recording this on Sunday, June 7th, and unfortunately, this is definitely not what you would describe as a time of mass human flourishing in the U.S. We've had a coronavirus pandemic, we've had lockdowns for almost 3 months, and then, as if that couldn't get any worse, we had a very disturbing public revelation of the death of George Floyd I'll talk about that, the details of that in a minute, but the George Floyd death, and then following that, lots of outrage and in particular protests that quickly became riots. And it's just a huge time of unrest right now. Many people feeling there's all kinds of injustice in the world. And so, I can only help so much on this kind of thing, but I thought what I would do today is talk about the topic, how to think constructively about public injustices. Because with the case of George Floyd, I think we're in a situation where there's something really disturbing that could be used to affect positive change, but also in many ways is already being used in a negative way. So I just wanted to share my thoughts, and I'm going to title this episode, How to Think Constructively About Public Injustices. And it's mainly about what kinds of questions should we ask when we hear of I'm describing it as public injustice because this is something that in some way we're all witnessing, we're all being asked to think about, and it's something we have to decide, okay, what should be done about this? And these often occur with different kinds of police type things, because police are supposed to, are supposed to enforce justice. And so if we see something that appears to be injustice, then it's very understandable for people to be upset about it and want to do something about it. Sometimes this can be true with different kinds of trial verdicts, but it's just the kind of common situation, not super common, but the situation we see not too infrequently where there's something public, it seems really wrong, and it's motivating a lot of people to want to change things. And so the question today is how to think constructively about that. And what I want to do is basically just share four questions that I think are helpful for thinking about these things. And I'll share a little bit about how I think they apply to this situation. But the main thing is just to share the questions and encourage you to ask those and to ask other people those, and hopefully that can lead to some constructive outcome. So I'll give you the questions overall, and then I'll talk a little bit about the current situation. So the four questions are, what actually happened? What, if any, mistakes in policy caused this to happen? That might be the most important one. What, if any, mistakes in policy caused this to happen? What changes in policy are being proposed? And then what are the likely positive and negative consequences of the proposed policies? So again, question one, what actually happened? Question two, what, if any, mistakes in policy caused this to happen? Question three, what changes in policy are being proposed? Question four, what are the likely positive and negative consequences of the proposed policies? So let's start off with what actually happened. And in a sense, this is one I have the least to say about, but it's really important when we're talking about a public injustice or supposed injustice, to know as much as possible what actually happened. Because it can be, I think there have been situations in the past where there's a claim of an injustice, and there definitely wasn't one when you investigate, but there was the appearance of one. Now, in this case, I think there definitely has been one, but there's a question of what happened? We have to really understand what happened to understand what is the injustice involved. So just if you look at the case of George Floyd, it's really hard to get a thorough explanation even of what people think really happened. And one way to get at that is, what are the different accounts in terms of, is there anyone defending the procedures? Were the procedures violated? Are they the wrong procedures? I mean, what we can see by the video I think is definitely important to watch, and I've tried to watch a bunch of them in a bunch of different angles. I mean, you can see, the thing that's super disturbing is just, you see this guy, and particularly once you know, okay, the crime involved or this, the suspected crime is like a forged $20 bill. So this is not somebody who's trying to murder somebody who's like an active threat to anybody. So in this case, you're thinking, okay, this is a situation where you would expect a kind of minimal amount of force. And then, you know, you see him and he seems subdued. And yet, you know, the main police officer, Derek Chauvin, you know, has his knee on his neck and there's other people restraining him and cops holding them away. And you can just see that it's just, you're just like, what is happening here? Why is this, how is this possibly necessary? Why is this cop so indifferent to this guy? I mean, this guy's saying, I can't breathe. What, and in another aspect of it is just people are talking to the cops and asking them, hey, what's going on? And the cops aren't saying anything. So it's like, they don't feel any need to explain themselves, to justify themselves, even though to any bystander, this looks literally murderous to be doing to this guy. And so I don't have too much to say about what actually happened, except they're very clearly some very bad things that happened. But even then I would want to know, like, okay, what is there, like, what is the explanation? Like, is it, cause it doesn't, I think the mainstream explanation seems to be something like, it's just like cops sort of overflowing with racism callously killed this guy. And this is not what it looks like. It doesn't even, I mean, there can definitely be a racial component, but the thing that really seems to stand out from what I know of the evidence is just like the complete excessiveness of the force, the lack of communication, the complete indifference toward the suffering of the individual and the possible death of the individual. I mean, I've heard some things about, like, okay, is it that in some way they were restraining him for his own good because he was intoxicated and like there was some risk of him going in? I mean, if that was the case, then there's still the element of, well, they need to, they would need to explain that and there needs to be some transparency about it, because otherwise everyone would have every reason to think the police are breaking the law and we might even need to risk our lives to stop what they're doing. So what actually happened? And it's not enough that it's, I mean, one thing is it has to be actually bad, but I want to know, okay, what ways is this bad? What actually happened? And sometimes it's useful to ask, okay, what are there different sides to the story? What's a realistic, another way to think of this is, what's a realistic way this could have happened, taking into account human motivations? And I think when we talk about, often we talk about motivations of bad things, it's easy to just dehumanize people and act like, oh, they're totally different and they're just bad and they're just racist and they're just, but there's something going on. So what is going on inside these people's heads? What's going on with the policy? I want to know these things to know what happened. And then that's the only way I'm going to know, okay, what are the policy changes that need to happen? So what actually happened? And if anyone has any really good accounts of what actually happened that are, you know, unusually objective, please send them to me, alex@alexepstein.com. But for our purposes, so there are some really, really bad things that happened here, at least in my current understanding. And so I think there's definitely, it's not a case where, oh, everything went well. I mean, the farthest thing from it, I think. And so then there's this question, and this might be the most important question, of what if any mistakes in policy caused this to happen? And why am I emphasizing policy? Well, what can happen is that you have the right policy. So in this case, the right set of laws and rules for police, and it's just a failed application. So you have a cop, let's say that, or in this case, several cops though, who are going against the rules. And but then in that case, you would have rules about what happens when you go against the rules, and then they would be presumably prosecuted and punished. And then you could say, okay, it was really bad that they violated the rules, but there's not a fundamental policy change. Or maybe it would be there's a policy change somewhere else. So is it a policy change in terms of you've heard unions pressuring government such that it's really hard to fire a member of the police force, or insufficient training in certain ways. But it's really important to just have an idea of, okay, do we think the policy was right and just somebody failed to act in accordance with the policy, and that can happen, and then just the policy need, then the punitive policy needs to be enforced, or is there something wrong with the policy? And in this case, I very strongly suspect that there's a bunch of things wrong in the policy. And so I've heard, and again, I'm focusing on questions in this episode because I don't have at all the expertise on this issue, but I do have, I think, some expertise in how to think constructively about these things. And so I'm in part raising these questions because I think they help us get toward the answer, and you can also find better sources. And again, I'm really interested in any kind of better sources. But if you look at, I mean, so one thing that people have raised that resonates a lot with me is the level of militarization of the police. And this is something that's often glorified on TV, but essentially having just a lot of overlap between the way our military officers are armed and deployed and the way police officers are armed and deployed, including just having, you know, these incredible amounts of protection and going in these teams and like busting down doors and having these amazing kinds of weapons and in some way having an itchy trigger finger, you know, that kind of thing can happen. And there's just, when you're talking about the police, these are people whose their whole job is to protect our freedom. So their conduct needs to be very circumscribed so that they're actually acting in a way that's consistent with protecting freedom. It's not just, oh, anything that goes wrong at all, then they can use unlimited force. And so something like, why is it that there's this much force being applied when it's this kind of, when you're talking about a potential, you know, forged $20 bill? Maybe there's an explanation for that, but I haven't heard it. And so that's a kind of variable. I think that's a real thing. There's also, people talk about this issue of lack of qualified immunity. So police are in certain ways immune to prosecution. And that seems like a very plausible thing that's going wrong in terms of policy. Just from what I know, the things I'm looking for, okay, what is causing the problematic elements here? So what is causing the seemingly excessive use of force? What's also there's a lot of questions about what's causing the lack of transparency. I find lack of transparency by government to be in general very disturbing. And I've talked a lot about with lockdowns, how part of it is just there's no real explanation of it. And there's a huge amount of arbitrary power. I just think that's completely inappropriate for government in general. And whether you're making these kinds of dictates in a seemingly civilized way, but you're really ultimately forcing people to act in accordance with them, and it's ultimately backed up by the police, whether it's that, where the police aren't really at the fore, or whether it's something where their ability to use force is completely at the fore because they can actually, you know, their misconduct can actually kill somebody who doesn't deserve to be killed. So the question, again, is what, if any, mistakes in policy caused this to happen? And I don't think, without a clear idea of that, it's almost impossible to do anything constructive. And I think the most one can do, if one has no idea about this, is to say, hey, there's something really wrong here. Let's have a discussion about what, if any, mistakes in policy caused this to happen. The third question is, what changes in policy are being proposed? This is important because we want to know the policy options. It's also very important if we're considering joining any particular cause or method of dealing with it. And I think this came up in the past week, because there was a very wide phenomenon of people putting like a black screen on their social media profiles and sometimes using the hashtag, I think it was Blackout Tuesday or Black Lives Matter. And I always want to know what changes in policy are being proposed, because as I'll talk about with the next question, there's just such a potential for the wrong policies to be proposed to deal with a wrong, but to have another wrong, so two wrongs don't make a right type thing. So whenever somebody is they're protesting or saying something, I want to know what policies are being proposed. And just to familiarize myself with any organization, what are they actually saying should be done? And then that'll just move right into the fourth question, which is, what are the likely positive and negative consequences of the proposed policies? So if you look at this issue, there's such a wide range of things being proposed. And I think on the reasonable side, well, I would have three categories, like reasonable, unreasonable, and nothing. But in a sense, the nothing is the worst. But so the reasonable would be, let's say there's the congressman, Justin Amash, and he's focused on the ending qualified immunity. And that's something where I would want to see, okay, what are the positives and negatives of that? But there's a plausibility that has a logic to it, seems reasonable. But again, that's the kind of thing we still need to really think through it and think about, okay, are there issues? What was the reason for having this qualified immunity in the first place? What led to that? Have those reasons changed? I would just want to know those kinds of things. But I would say that I have not seen, most of what I've seen has been in the category of things that are either unreasonable or very, very far-fetched to me, and certainly not justified by evidence. So, you know, I saw one kind of meme going up about, okay, here are eight different things. And they say something like, one of them was no strangleholds. Now, I probably have a lot more familiarity with strangleholds than most people because I do it recreationally in terms of Brazilian jiu-jitsu. But there are a whole bunch of reasons why you would want strangleholds and why those can actually be much more humane than shooting people. And I know that the Brazilian jiu-jitsu community has done a lot of work with law enforcement, helping them learn how to control people in a humane way. So I think that a stranglehold can be part of the most humane strategy. And if you're taught really well, it's essentially zero risk to people. But I got just really upset when I noticed people just saying, oh yeah, no strangleholds. Like there was a stranglehold here. I don't even think it was technically a stranglehold, but they had a knee on somebody's neck with his face in the ground. So that seems like, I mean, when there's no resistance, this is just, I cannot see any justification for that whatsoever. But to go to say no strangleholds, this is where we can totally do more harm than good by just saying, okay, there's something bad going on, but we're not going to think it through. And we're just going to say, here's something we should do. And then let's get a law passed. And then, but it can just have huge amounts of destruction. You know, another one that I just think is totally irrational is the defund the police. I mean, this is one where I know for a fact that just people, particularly in poorer areas and often minority areas, are just terrified of this idea of defunding the police, because in many, many cases, what they feel like is the police have problems, but the real thing is the police are protecting them from criminals, and what they don't want to do, often criminals of the same race, and what they don't want is the police to leave their area because they will be very much at the mercy of criminals. And this connects to another kind of policy of sorts. I mean, you can think of this as the protesting and in particular the rioting as a kind of policy, as in they're saying, well, this is justified. There is this injustice. And so this is part of our policy, is we are going to get attention by destroying property. And even with the protesting, I see this narrative that, oh, well, protesting is the most American thing. What could be more American than protesting? I think you should be able to protest on your own property and protest in a way that respects people's rights. And certainly in the era of social media, we have a lot of ways we can do that and get attention. But to say that when there's an injustice that you get to indefinitely disrupt everybody's lives and just swarm the streets indefinitely and prevent people from going to work, I mean, you're going to kill people who can't get to the hospital, for example. I think there's this whole, I mean, that's, this is a whole other subject, but I think we should think about even when we hear somebody is protesting as a response, not just say reflexively, oh, that's good, but say, is that really a fair and proper thing to do? What are the positive and negative consequences of that? Because these protests have hugely negative consequences, even leaving aside the rioting. And if you look at the rioting, I mean, it's just so tragic to see people's just lie. I mean, literally many people getting killed in these things. And then they're just people's life's work getting destroyed, people being terrified, people saying like, I'm not going to rebuild this business. Again, it's so bad. And so much of it is coming from not this idea that we don't have to think through our response. We just have to be upset. And if there's something that's really bad, then anything is permitted. A final area of the proposed policies is the kind of just general, let's shut down capitalism type stuff. And this is where just you really need to think about, is there any basis for this whatsoever? Because if you think about, okay, what are the actual police states? Those are not capitalist countries. Capitalist countries are countries that respect property rights. The police states, which often call themselves socialist, those are the ones where police have absolute power and abuse it left and right. And so just to say, okay, there's really something really bad that happened, and so we're going to attack the whole capitalist system, including people's property rights, that is just a completely unjustified reaction to all of this. So unfortunately, I don't think that people are thinking through what changes are being proposed and what are the likely positive and negative consequences of the proposed policies, because most of the proposed policies or even just the actions taken so far are just hugely, hugely negative. So those are the, and I wish I had a more positive note to end these questions on, but I think that is, I'm raising this in part just because it's not a positive thing right now, but I think these constructive things, there can be positive consequences. There is a world in which we took what happened in the George Floyd case and we used it to really improve how police forces function insofar as there are policy problems. Like, there is a world where that could happen, and I'm not seeing it happen right now, so I would just try to make a contribution toward that. Now, as we wrap up, I want to, in the context of these four questions, just share what I think are some mistakes that I think that are causing unconstructive responses. I'll just go through these quickly. So one is yes, but thinking with regard to injustices. So you see, I've seen a bunch of versions of this, but some people who've been really opposed to the riots, which I'm very sympathetic with, have said, yes, you know, yes, it was a horrible thing that happened to George Floyd, but the riots are worse. And then people say, well, no, yes, riots are bad. You know, destroying a building is bad, but killing an innocent person is worse. And then there's even this view of like, oh, yes, he did this, but he was a bad guy in some definite ways. I think that's definitely true. And I think it's totally wrong for the media to act. I mean, there's this NPR narrative like, oh, this is a gentle giant, and not talking about like a serious criminal history, including some really bad stuff he did during his life. But he definitely did not deserve to die this way. That he's not being punished for that. And so, but that it's an example of like, you want not yes, but thinking, but yes, and thinking. When we're dealing with multiple injustices, it's not useful to say, okay, well, this one is bad, or this one is bad, but my injustice is really, really bad. And you just think, why are you doing that? So I just say, when we're dealing with these multiple injustices, and particularly if there's an unjust response to an injustice, it's really valuable to just say, okay, these are all injustices, and let's think about what's the interrelationship among the different injustices and the different issues involved, versus like saying one doesn't count or another doesn't count. And I'm just seeing a lot of that, and I don't think that's at all constructive. Another one is taking easy actions to gain status and avoid shaming. So I would put a lot of the, not all of it, because I can't speak to all of it, but a lot of the use of the black box and the use of the expression Black Lives Matter, I'm very suspicious of. And I'm very suspicious of anything in life that is done that gives easy status. Anything where there's easy, because what does it mean that it gives you easy status? You don't really have to do anything and you get viewed as doing the right thing. And often it's you gain status easily and you avoid shaming easily. But if it's really, if there's really just that clear cut an issue, then probably almost every reasonable person is going to agree on it. But usually what happens is the issue involved that you're endorsing is not clear cut. So if it's the death of George Floyd was a grave injustice, or the way that occurred, then I think almost everybody agrees with that. But then it's people are then saying they're having to repeat like the hashtag Black Lives Matter or Blackout Tuesday. But that's not something obvious. If you look at what Black Lives Matter stands for, what positions they've taken, you definitely couldn't say those are all obvious positions. And then a lot of the positions that are being connected with that, you know, very closely, whether they're explicitly part of the official Black Lives Matter movement or not, but things like defund police or certain characterizations of generalizations about police or generalizations about most Americans being racist in different kinds of ways, those are certainly not obvious, even if you think they're true. And so these kinds of easy actions, what they end up doing is they don't clarify the issue. They just actually lead to a lack of discussion about the issue. And one can very easily inadvertently support a bad policy. So if you just think about, maybe by putting up a black box, maybe I'm supporting a policy, maybe I'm going to contribute to the defunding of police that's going to hurt a lot of innocent, you know, let's just say in this case, black individuals in a poor neighborhood, if you're focused in particular on innocent black lives mattering. And that can so easily happen just by taking these easy actions to gain status and avoid shaming. And related to this is the idea of, like, a big mistake I think is just activism without a clear goal. We should just be really clear on what are we trying to achieve? And then thinking it through with the four questions I mentioned. And I saw a tweet recently that captured a lot of these things. It was by Scott Adams, who's an interesting guy. He's the creator of the Dilbert cartoon, but he's also a cultural commentator. And he says, "I can't respect a protest that has these qualities. One, no specific suggestions on what to change. Two, data is not allowed into the debate. Three, dissenting opinions, no matter how respectful and well-meaning, are not allowed. Four, low regard for public safety." And I agree with that totally. And I don't think Adam's point at all is that this is okay, or we should be indifferent, or we shouldn't do anything. It's that we need to think really carefully when we see these public injustices. So again, what actually happened? What, if any, mistakes in policy caused this to happen? What changes in policy are being proposed? And what are the likely positive and negative consequences of the proposed policies? So if you know of any good resources that are asking these questions and answering these questions, please let me know. Email me at alex@alexepstein.com. And I hope that these questions are useful to you in dealing with the injustices we are seeing today. So a little bit of a sadder episode of Human Flourishing Project than usual, but still I hope it is useful. As always, if you have any questions, comments, love mail, or hate mail, you can email me at alex@alexepstein.com to learn about new episodes, to get notified when I release them. Go to humanflourishingproject.com, and to join the discussion on Facebook, go to facebook.com/humanflourishingproject. That's it for this week. I'll be back next time with another great topic. Until then, I'm Alex Epstein. This has been the Human Flourishing Project.